Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in this wonderful world of marketing. Now, in today's episode, I have the pleasure of interviewing Greg Shove. We dive into product market fit and so much more. He is a seasoned entrepreneur with a remarkable track record. He has founded 5 companies, resulting in 3 successful exits, including 2 of them being over $100 million. Now, with a blend of Canadian, British, and American influences, Greg really brings a unique perspective to the startup culture and product development. In this episode, we really explore insights on understanding the market and customers, the critical role of product marketing. So if you're a product marketer, this is definitely going to whet your palate, and why focusing solely on growth can sometimes be a trap. Feels a little counterintuitive, right? Stick around and listen to why. He also shares his experiences and advice on avoiding common pitfalls. And I have to tell you, I love the authenticity of what he brings to the table and shares on what he's done wrong. Now, we talk about not just relying on trends, but more about the customer feedback that is not from just family and friends, and the importance of hiring that skilled product marketer early on. Whether you're an entrepreneur or a marketer, Greg's insights are really going to help you build a more sustainable and customer-focused business. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into the world of marketing. Let's talk marketing. Greg, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Excited to have you on here today to get kind of a view on executive alignment and product market fit.
Oh, well, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So let's have the audience get to know you a little bit. We always start off with our starter questions. Now, what was your first engagement or interaction with marketing?
Well, first of all, you got to know that I'm Canadian, so that means I'm nice, and we're not as good marketers as Americans. You know, we don't brag in Canada. We don't toot our own horn. We're just sort of a little more quiet, more reserved. So my first marketing was not some great ad campaign or commercial. It was a catalog. I had my first startup was selling computer parts to small business, and so the way we sold them was through catalog back in the day. Before e-commerce.
Paper days.
wasting money, mailing catalogs, hoping someone would call. And then I would buy all these parts in America, ship them to Canada in a big box, and then stick them in a little box and put a label on them and mail them out one at a time. And every time I mailed one out, I made $100. It was kind of a simple business model.
And this was your business?
It was my business. I'd worked for big tech companies for about 7-8 years, and then decided I should be an entrepreneur. And that was my first business in Canada. Sold it for $250,000. Thought I was a genius, and I was just lucky. And moved to California to go to business school at Stanford, and we stayed. So my wife and I and 2 kids who were 1 year old at the time came to Silicon Valley, basically. I met a guy in Toronto who said, you want to be in the tech business? Why the hell you are in Toronto? If you go to a grocery store called Molly Stone's in Palo Alto, you'll meet more people in the tech industry than you'll meet all year in Canada. So get the hell out of Canada and go to Palo Alto, Silicon Valley. So that's what I did.
Which has, you know, based on just kind of your LinkedIn profile, it's done well for you. So that's where you started. Where are you at now? What are you doing now?
I'm now running a startup. We're called Section. We are an online school. We are 4.5 years old. We're venture backed by a company called a VC called General Catalyst. Great VC. And we are trying to offer we're offering executive ed online. We're trying to find a way to do it profitably and grow. It's hard to disrupt education. It's really hard to disrupt business schools and executive ed. It's been a battle, frankly. You know, we had a great up in the pandemic. And when I thought we had an amazing product and we had amazing marketing And then I realized, no, it's because people were bored and in the home and had nothing to do. And the company was prepared to reimburse for anything to keep their employees actually doing something during the pandemic. So just like, you know, Netflix or just like Zoom or just like Peloton, the pandemic ended and our sales started to decelerate. So we went from zero to $10 million pretty much in about 12 to 18 months as a business, as a startup, which was crazy. And I thought at 10, I could see 100. And then I saw 5.
That's what a wild story. But I also feel like that's the life of startup, right? You kind of are like, well, it's not this easy where you're like putting your finger to the wind and which way it's blowing. But sometimes it can be that sensitive to where like everything that's happening in the environment can actually impact where your business is. All right, Greg, we talked about where you were, where you're at now. I want to know, what is it that you love about what you do? But with the good, there's also the bad. I also want to know what, if anything, I can pluck out of what you currently do, and it would be perfect. So let's start with the positive.
Okay. Well, first of all, I love building teams that build products that don't exist. So that to me is the biggest high of sort of either being a CEO or working at a startup is you can create something that doesn't exist and bring it to market and see if people want it. So that's great. When they want it, it's even better. When they don't, it really sucks. You can go back to the drawing board. So I think it's a chance to create the future a little bit. Right. And hopefully improve someone's life in some way. It doesn't have to be, you're not going to transform them necessarily, right? But it's certainly in our current startup, building an educational product. We have this Slack channel, which is student feedback. And whenever stuff isn't going well, all of us just look at that Slack channel and read that student feedback. And that kind of like, that picks you up when you realize people are taking your courses, loving them, kind of getting new jobs or getting promoted, whatever it might be. That's what makes up for the fact that you can't get your CAC to work and you're spending too much money and, and don't have a good CAC to lifetime value ratio,
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Now that's what you love. What, if anything, if I had a magic wand and I could pluck anything out, what do I pluck out to make it easier?
Knowing when you have product market fit, that's really product market fit. So I think the hardest thing about being a CEO or a CMO or anyone kind of running a startup, part of a management team of a startup, is getting false signals about product market fit and then investing in those false signals and essentially burning time, burning capital, and realize it either wasn't a very big market or you didn't really have product market fit, so people did not renew. Like it's really what's the hardest thing about building companies and new products, which is, do I really have the right product market fit, one that I can invest behind and kind of start to grow, or is it going to be kind of a dead end,
Well, I kind of want to start to dive into that already, because I think that it will fall in line with normally the trends question that I ask of like, how are you keeping up with the trends? Because I've got to imagine trying to find that right product market fit also has to do with following trends and kind of being able to sniff out like what direction, a trend is going to go. So tell me a little bit about how you look at trends to help inform a bit of that product market fit.
Sure, I don't. I think they're a total. I think they're a total distraction. I think
amazing.
I mean, I think trends are cool, and I think if you're, I don't know, some fast fashion business, maybe trends are important. But if you're trying to build like sustainable product market fit, either with consumers, but especially with enterprise, I think all those other signals, trends, what your competitors are doing, what some of your prospects, what your salespeople are telling you. Sometimes they're not telling you the right stuff, right? I think we are prone to delusion as entrepreneurs, especially the CMO, especially the marketer. I mean, either the head of sales or head of marketing. I'm not sure, actually. Well, maybe the CEO, founder, head of sales, head of marketing. Three of them form this delusional triangle, right? And they interpret these signals, right? Confirmation bias around product market fit. No, hire a product marketer. Hire someone who does research.
Yeah.
Don't go talk to your friends. Don't follow trends. Go talk to 100 customers or prospects that might be your target customer and really deeply understand them and understand the problem, that you think you're solving for them? And is it a problem that will last a while? Is it a problem they'll pay for? You know, like we don't do that. It's amazing to me, and I've done it myself, how many companies get started with really no understanding of the kind of the product problem or the, you know, the what the market really wants. We don't do it. We think we have a genius idea. We think we know. We look, we have confirmation bias all the time. We look for data that supports our point of view, right? Oh, look, the competitor's doing it, must be working. I can't tell you how many people have told me at Section, our online school, that we followed what you were doing because we thought you were the leader. And I'm like, don't follow what I'm doing. Like we're not getting it right. Like, go talk to your prospects. The other thing I think about a lot, Katja, is, how do you get to 1,000 unaffiliated customers? Unaffiliated.
What do you mean by that?
You don't know them. You don't know them. You really don't.
Unaffiliated.
Any startup can get 5 or 10 customers. Any CEO or CMO can find 100 customers, you know, can find 200, you know, can find. So depending on the product or service, you might not need 1,000, you might need 100, or you might need 10,000. But how do you genuinely find enough customers in a marketing motion that is repeatable, that tells you you actually have product market fit? Because product market fit is actually two sides, product and market. Yeah. A lot of people think, they find product fit. But if you don't have a go-to-market that works cost-effectively, you actually don't have product market fit. You might have product fit, right? But you never found the market fit, which is you got to get the product to the market in a way that works, meaning you know what you spend to acquire the customers, you know, lessen your revenue. So I just think that we get all these false signals and we fall in love with early customers. Sometimes they're our friends, especially when you think about software companies, right? Every good software entrepreneur can get 20 or 50 or 70 software customers, but they're affiliated. They know them. They're their friends. You can get it to $1 million in ARR or $1 million in revenue, but that's not product market fit.
So let's take it back a step, because we've thrown out and you've decoupled it into two different ways. Mm-hmm. Define product market fit for me. What is product market fit? Because I view product market fit as like, there is a need and this product fulfills it. And that's really like dumbing it down. But like, I think what most people think that it is.
Yeah, I think
there's
that's
a product
half of it.
And it fits,
I think that's half of it. I think you have found a problem. You built the product. The product solves the problem. And people are telling you that, yes, this product solves a problem. And they're also saying one more thing, though. If you took it away, I'd be pissed. Like, you know, to have product fit, it has to be that people will not substitute you really easily with something else. That if you said, no, I want to take my product back, they'd like throw a fit and say, no, I need your product. You can't take it back. Right. So think about AI right now. There are probably 10, OpenAI probably has 10 million customers globally. I've been doing a little bit of math looking at their kind of revenue and customer base. So I'm guessing around 10 million. There's millions of those people that probably can live without GPT. They don't yet have product market fit, but it's cheap. It's $20 a month. It's cool. They're testing it out. But there's millions of people, and I'm one of them, that we cannot live without ChatGPT. Like our lives would be worse. Our work lives would be worse. We're going to pay the $20. We get so much value from it. If someone took it away from us, we'd be pissed. That's the problem. That's the product fit. Right. You cannot be substituted easily. The market fit, the second half of PMF, is you have a way to go to market, find those customers and sell to them profitably. Profitably. So your CAC, customer acquisition cost, is tolerable, right? It's sustainable. So a lot of people find product fit and they fail on the kind of market fit, which is I really think it's go to market fit, that in a large market that you are able to market to, you can do that profitably with the product you have. That's true product market fit. Everything up until that point is a giant experiment, and it's likely going to blow up in your face.
You're so positive, Greg.
It's so much fun.
Well, I think that you've been there, you've done that, you've seen a lot of things. I'm really interested also in understanding, okay, so I think maybe I have product market fit. What's that connection for me as a marketer then, right? Or am I continuing to be in this delusional, you know, no, triangle?
You might be. No, I think the thing you do is, I think what you have to ask yourself is, and probably research to get the answer in some way, is how big is the market? So you've got product market fit, great.
Yeah.
Is that going to be, you know, how big will that be? Is that going to be $1 million a year company? Be happy with $1 million a year company because you've got product market fit at $1 million in revenue. Or is it 10 or is it 100 or is it a billion or whatever, right? The reality is most markets in terms of real product market fit are smaller than we think. And where people get in trouble is they keep trying to push and push and spend and spend, trying new and, you know, different marketing tactics to kind of grow a market that's not really there, right?
So,
and that's when they start. That's why CMOs, as you know, I'm sure you know that the CMO job tenure is like 18 months, right? In like large companies.
Oh my gosh. That's why there's so many fractional CMOs out there, because it's such for a limited amount of time.
Right. And that's because the market, it's the same with sales as well these days, like enterprise sales leaders are the first to get fired. When you don't hit your numbers, if you're a CEO or a board, you're like, well, change out the head of sales. He or she must be the problem. And or change out the head of marketing. He or she must be the problem. Because we know the market's bigger and we have a great product. Maybe the market's not as big as you thought.
Yeah.
And maybe as you go for that bigger market, your product has less fit. And if your product has less fit, it's not going to work as well, right? All the numbers will be worse, right? So I think a lot of this is try to get a sense of how big your market is and then moderate your expectations around the size of that market.
What's your advice on figuring that out? Because I often see, because it's always in a presentation, right? This presentation that's going to sell you on like this product is going to be so amazing. Like there's only like the arrow is only going up for where this industry is going to go. And I don't know if it's like inflated research reports that give you an overall, like where the market is for, I don't know, apple trees. That's, you know what I mean? Like apple trees are going to be in high demand and year over year, you're going to see this growth. But what I often see is there are these estimates in like 2 years ago's PowerPoint and now there's not. Like what happened and where do I get that information?
I don't know how you get it in any reliable way except interviewing prospects. I think you can do market research, some real market research. You know, pulling data from other people's research and saying that's the size of the market. I don't think that works. That's just kind of like that's how you raise the money. But I wouldn't run my business that way. I would do a real market segmentation analysis to start. Then every year I'd be updating that with, I'm interviewing prospects. I'm trying to understand, you know, does my product solve, you know, a different prospect's problem? Like I've got my core customers. I need to grow out. I need to grow out from those core customers. Is my product really going to do that? Right. And I think it's a lot of research, a lot of interviews, a lot of talking.
It is a lot of interviews. Yeah. And when you talk about interviews, is it as simple as just asking like some basic questions, or do you think it has to be much more in depth?
Oh, I think it's, here's my product. You know, does it work? Do you like it? Like, you know, does it solve your problem? And then what else do you buy today to solve this problem? It's usually not that people will usually say, oh yeah, you got the right problem and you have the right product. But I don't really want to buy anything else. Like it's hard to get people to buy.
It is hard to get people to buy. I feel like you have to engage with them. And to me, this is like a marketing, this is to me where I think marketing steps into it, right? Like there are a lot of people that'll purchase things. I think software is a really great example and AI is an even better example. It's like the new hotness. I'm going to purchase it because it's a low barrier to entry, right? Like I can spend $20, but do I really want $40? The only way that you're going to get me to pay more is if I have value at $20, right? And like that to me is where marketing steps in. Also, like my job should be the other side of the funnel. Once people have come in, how do I get them to engage in it? How do I get them to use this every single day? Because to your point, if they use it every single day, now all of a sudden they're answering that question of like, don't take it away. Yeah. I use this every single day.
Yeah. So what do you call that, by the way? Do you call it like, is that called customer marketing or sort of customer adoption work? Like, because I think that's usually underfunded in marketing.
Oh, 1,000%. I always go into an organization and I think it's a bow tie funnel, right? Like we're so focused on lead gen and getting them through the door. And like, then we drop them like a bad habit.
Yeah, totally.
There's no nurturing unless we need a testimonial or a case study. At that point, then we're all about our customers. I do call that customer marketing. And I do think it's most organizations don't have it. Or they will call it something else. Maybe it's under branding, you know, maybe it's part of product marketing as well too. But there's not like this dedicated in a marketing org, I don't typically see a dedicated person to like, all right, how can I nurture them and get them through my funnel so that they are truly like ambassadors for my brand?
Yeah. And do you think that's because, especially in Silicon Valley, kind of in tech software products, the perception is the product should do all that work? You know, like if the product's amazing, if the product has all these kind of hooks, right, and behavioral kind of hooks in them or triggers, that should do the work and we shouldn't have to spend any more money to kind of get adoption or get people to use it. You know what I mean? Like what?
Yeah, I mean, like my armchair theory would be that it is a percentage of it has got to be something like that. I also think like there are a lot of like product adoption platforms that you can put on top and that data is going to do all of the things for me. Right. But like really when it comes down to it, a lot of people want to be able to engage and learn how to do things. I want to talk to someone. If I don't talk to someone, I'm going to get frustrated and then I'm not going to use it. So I think that there is, and this is the ironic part that goes kind of against what you're saying of like kind of following the trends, or maybe we had different definitions of the trends. I think we're trending in more people, like human to human interaction, and especially as customers. And that I think more technology companies are less focused on that. I think before COVID, there was a lot more automation, right? Like it's all about these chatbots and let me put a workbook on here and like I can do a step-by-step. And there are a few people that can work within that. But I think at this point, we're craving such human to human interaction. Like I need to ask my question in this way and it doesn't completely solve it. But then again, that's my armchair theory. That's what I think.
So does that mean we're going to get more salespeople back? Like, I don't disagree. I'm just curious what do you think that means for marketers or like the head of sales? Like more humans trying to actually get meetings and going to conferences and sort of establishing that sort of connection? Or is it more AI robots like just sending more, you know, SDR or BDR emails?
So I think that now you're interviewing me here, huh? I think it's a combination of those things, right? Okay. I think that where we are in technology today, we have a lot more AI, we have a lot more automation for those things that do not need the human touch. I think what we have to get better at is distinguishing at what point do we need the human touch, mm-hmm. right? And if we are able to like get more data on like at what point do we need to start engaging at the human level, then I think that we can arm our salespeople with the right marketing assets and like marketing know-how for, okay, now engage them. And this is the value that they're needing at this particular stage. And some of it is going to trade shows. I think trade shows are a little inflated personally, but I think it's also, what do you do at trade shows? You have to stand out in a certain way at trade shows, right? So I think that that's what it is. I also think like, it's not just about sales. I think it's about customer support. I personally think that companies should be investing way more in customer support to feed like that other side of the bow tie funnel from a marketing perspective. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's right. But the reality is you fund a company and you need growth. And depending on how much capital you've raised, you know, you can everybody's focused on growth and almost growth at all costs. I'd say we're out of that phase.
Oh, yeah.
We're in a new phase now, except for the AI companies. I think they're probably in the kind of spend as much as you can building and marketing, you know, open up the funnel.
Yeah.
But, you know, we lived the last 10 years in a world where it was kind of grow at all costs. And that means it's just one half of the bow tie is funded. And you know, no one's really has not been that worried about or as worried about, you know, customer retention or customer marketing or, you know, kind of long-term customers. And again, that's kind of my point, right? that's sort of my point. Yeah. The markets are probably smaller than you realize. Find your place in that market and kind of really own it, right? Service those customers well. You'll probably grow more slowly, but you'll probably burn less capital. And yeah, just kind of, you know, own your part of the world, you know, whatever that part is, and own those customers and just build likely a more capital efficient business with better retention, better customer satisfaction, right? Again, might be smaller business, just might be a better business though.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that there are some technology companies specifically that try to be kind of all things to all people almost a little too fast and then aren't able to get that focused in on that right product market fit?
Oh, I think it happens. I think it happens all the time. I think it happens all the time because they get a little bit of product market fit and then they kind of try to blow it out, right? Or again, they found a small market. They realize it's small, so they start adding more features to the product, thinking they can move into other markets, right? Other verticals or other adjacent kind of customers. Yeah. Then the product gets more bloated. Like, I mean, a lot can go wrong, and it's got to do with, I think, accepting how big your market is and really finding your product market fit.
So I love the fact that earlier you said it's not just about like the research, get a product marketing person in there to be able to do some of that research. That is not typically what I hear. I feel like when, especially a startup, it's always interesting to me to see what they hire first and for what. What are your thoughts on like, all right, this is a new startup. Who do I put in first? Is it a product marketing person?
Yes, it's the product marketer. I've made that mistake at least three times. I've run six startups and I've at least three times, maybe four, I haven't hired early enough a great product marketer. I've hired a good marketer and I've hired good salespeople. And the reality is, you know, they don't know what they're doing without kind of the eyes and ears of a product marketer to go talk to prospects and find out how to shape the narrative of the company, shape the narrative of the sales pitch based on what the problems really are at the prospect, right? It's a number one hire that entrepreneurs do not make fast enough, a real product marketer that will go out and kind of figure out how we take this product to market. Or by the way, we might have the wrong product. I can tell you what's going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years, probably even sooner. All these AI product companies, most will crash. Most will crash because they did, and not because it's a bubble and all that, and it is, but they don't have product marketers yet on staff, and they're coming up with these product or platform solutions, and they haven't talked to enterprise customers yet. And what they're going to find is that the problem might be the right problem to solve, but the way they're solving it's not going to work for the enterprise, for the customer, or they can't plug into the customer's infrastructure or the way the customer works or their kind of systems, right? Because they didn't they're not doing enough customer discovery. And AI is going to be more of a service business than a product business. I think what we'll realize is that for enterprise AI, there's a lot more services, and there are all these entrepreneurs following a SaaS software model, getting a lot of capital from VCs, and they're going to run into the fact that they don't really know what the customers actually need or want to implement these solutions. And they're going to try to sell it like software, and it's not software. Not yet, right? I think it will be eventually. So I just think that you need a product marketer and you need to go talk to your prospects.
I couldn't agree more. I also think another common pitfall is an entrepreneur thinks that they're hiring product marketing because they've hired a marketer. And these two are very distinctive roles. And I often am in organizations where they won't, it's hard to find the right product marketing person, because I think it's one of these roles that people think that they know what it is, but they don't actually know. So in just kind of your experience, what would you say makes a good product marketer? What do you look for?
First of all, that they even understand this problem.
Yeah.
Kind of pretty, you know, have a real sort of, you can tell when you talk to them and you interview them that they have that same almost concern. Like they don't want to end up with a great product with no fit. And they know their job is to understand the customer and then bring that back and then craft pricing, packaging, narrative, you know, collateral. Uh-huh. It's not just collateral. Collateral is just the end product of, I actually know the products, the customer's problem. I know the pricing that's going to work. I know the packaging of these different products that could, you know, we'll try and see which one lands. Like it's someone that really just kind of digs that problem. It's a pretty complex problem. And it's not, there's not a fast answer. Like this might take months or 6 months or 9 months to get all this done. Right. And meanwhile, the CEO is like, you know, where's my marketing? Right.
So where's my marketing? Yeah. Where's where's that deck? Where's that flyer?
Right. Where's the ad? Where's that cool thing? Where, I mean, show me the website. Like, you know, and the board's asking, where can I see? And the product marketer, I got work to do. Like, don't distract me. I got to go get this shit done. Right. And so it's a hard hire to make. It's really hard to find great product marketers that are willing to do this kind of slog to get to the right answer. But when they get there, and then they adjust it. And then what the best product marketers spend a lot of time on sales calls or are listening to sales calls, right? They're really understanding, is this landing? And if it's not landing, we got to fix it. And what do we fix? The product, the story, the pricing, you know, lots of levers to pull there, right?
Yeah, I think that I love all the things that you're saying, because for one, I don't think that we listen to customers enough. From a marketing perspective, what I gain from listening to a customer, whether it's in an interview or in a sales call, is the language that they use to describe what their challenge is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I can craft all sorts of different ways to say things, right? And an ad, but if that's not the language that's going to resonate with them, that they even use on a day-to-day basis, there's no way of me knowing that unless I listen and have those conversations. So I couldn't agree with you more. I love where this conversation is going. This is literally, I can't talk about timing. Literally was talking about this earlier today.
Well, and to your point, right? If the language is wrong, the language is a foundational piece. And if you get that wrong, then everything's just built on a shaky foundation. You don't understand your customer. You don't speak in their language. You probably aren't. That means you're not probably listening to them. And then when you go to price it, and when you go to like build all your marketing collateral, you're just like the whole thing is it's just on a weak foundation. And then all of a sudden, everybody starts to point fingers.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Because things aren't working, right? Things aren't going to work because you're not landing with your prospect. Therefore, the salespeople suck or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, don't get me started.
Well, I'm glad that we went down, honestly, this road, because it's, I have yet to work for an organization that like hits the nail on the head when it comes to product marketing. And I do think it's a tough role. Me as a marketer, I'm sitting in this role and I'm like, that is not marketing. Like, it's not the downstream, it's the upstream, right?
And
I hate that kind of verbiage, it is very true to me. That is upstream that you will feel the downstream impact if you're solving it upstream right here. So
here's the way I think about it. And you see this a lot when you see companies either pivoting or trying to add a new product or a new market, or sort of find growth again. Maybe they've stalled and they replace the CEO and a new CEO comes in. The board's like, hey, you got to find growth. And what often happens is the CEO or, you know, maybe the founder, you know, someone comes up with an idea and that becomes the strategy. You know, let's go in after this market or let's build this, you know, this new product, right? It's just so common, right? You can see why, how it happens. And part of that's the fault of the board, because they're saying, hey, listen, we need more growth. And you're on like a 12-month runway or maybe 24-month. Like, we got to make this happen. And they're really, what the board ought to do is hire a product marketer. Keep the CEO. hire a really kick-ass product marketer and say, go spend 6 months and come back and tell us how we find growth. Because if they come back with a good answer, then you can start to mobilize capital and team and people to say, okay, that's the market we should go after. That's the product. You know, that's the opportunity that's there, right? But we don't. We tend to sort of replace the CEO, replace the CMO, replace the head of product, replace one person, and the new person comes in, and they're supposed to have the solution. They're not going to have the solution.
They're supposed to have the solution, and they can make the impact almost immediately, and that doesn't happen.
Yeah, and that's the other issue. The timelines are too tight. So if the timelines are tight, everybody wants, you know, stuff to happen fast, then you skip steps.
Yeah.
Product marketing is an easy step to skip, right? To your point. you know, they want to see collateral. They want to see a new website. They want to see this other stuff, right?
I would even say it's an easy step to think that you've actually already taken, because I think if you've got product management, the thought is, okay, well, I've already solved it. I've done a bit of voice of customer. I've done voice of customer who has told me all of this stuff, but it is, to your point, or maybe I'm just interpreting this of what you're saying, I think it's more of it's continuous. Yep. It doesn't stop at like the beginning or the inception or the idea of what your product is going to be. It has to be continuous, because I also think that's how it will inform where you grow your product, where you need to stop and take a beat. And I think that's what you can take to the board too.
Yep.
I get it. Well, this has been amazing. I have one final question for you, which I feel like has been your answer throughout this whole thing, but let me see what you can give me here. If you knew then what you know now, what is the advice that's marketing or non-marketing that you give yourself?
No, I'll give a marketing answer. Okay. Or I'll give one answer that's marketing, maybe another one that's not marketing. The one answer is craft your story. Once you know the problem you're solving and for whom, really spend time and find someone to help you, someone who's really great at crafting narrative. I do think the story is the strategy, and it's a way to communicate to customers and to employees, to recruit people. So find, you know, build your narrative. I always did it later. I always think we can do it sooner, right? Build your narrative. Yes. Once you know what it is you want to do, kind of tell that story and really craft that story. I think that'll resonate with prospects, again, employees, job candidates, whatever. So it just, I think everybody can align around the right story.
Yes, that is the truth. Well, thank you so much for coming on here, sharing your wisdom, also helping me through these technical difficulties because we've got multiple camera angles today. But thank you again so much.
Thank you. I loved it. It was a great talk.
I hope that you got a lot out of that episode. I certainly did. I loved his candor, his authenticity, his humility. He's definitely not afraid of telling it how it is and having other people learn from just kind of pitfalls and challenges that he has seen. Now, I've got your takeaways for this episode. So if you're ready, buckle up, Buttercup. The first one is, understand your customers to get the product market fit. Now, we really dug into why understanding your market and customers is so crucial for building successful products. The main takeaway is to just kind of steer clear of getting distracted by the latest trends. Now, at first when he said this, I was a little shocked. I'm like, why are you not looking at trends? But the more we dove into it, the more I understood. Instead of focusing on trends, focus on truly understanding your target market. It's easy for entrepreneurs to fall into the trap of seeing what they want to see. So it's important to really conduct this thorough, unbiased customer research. He says, aim to engage with about 1,000 customers or as many as you can, and make sure that they're not personally connected to you so that you get more reliable feedback, right? Not that your family and friends won't provide feedback, but some would say that there is an inherent bias if you know them, right? So this allows to be realistic about the true market size, right? Which we talked a lot about. Setting growth expectations based on the actual market potential will set you up for long-term success. So do deep customer interviews to really get to the heart of their problems and needs. And understand that the feedback should be continuous. It's not one and done. Regularly updating your market segmentation and your customer insights, will help keep your product more relevant and in tune with what's changing in the market. So stay effective, right? Key takeaway number two, product marketing plays a key role in product market fit. Now, I love that we went down this rabbit hole. I have interviewed others who are in product marketing, so it was really nice to hear from an entrepreneur's perspective the importance of finding that right product marketer, right? Now, finding the right product marketer means that you're going to find the right product marketing fit, because it's more than just about a great product. It's about having like that skilled product marketer who can connect the product with the market. bringing on that dedicated product marketer early in your startup can really also make a difference. Their expertise at doing that deep customer research needed to make sure that your product hits the mark is really the job that needs to get done. Their job goes beyond just kind of setting up marketing campaigns. They are the ones that are helping create compelling stories about your product, setting the right price, and design packaging that really grabs the attention. Now, from my perspective, a fantastic product marketer is really deeply involved in understanding what the customer wants. This is the hill I will die on, right? Like, you have to understand your customers. They are the ones that are spending time on sales calls to figure out what's working and what's not. And then they can adjust the product pricing, the product pricing and messaging as needed. Now, these marketers really help make sure that the company talks in a way that truly resonates with customers, turning that feedback into actionable strategies. I'm all about action, you know that. They're key to making sure that product really fits the market and lays a solid foundation for future marketing efforts. Key takeaway number three, continuous customer engagement is so important. You can balance growth if you're continuously engaged with your customers. Too often, brands get so caught up in the rush to expand and acquire new customers that they overlook the importance of nurturing the ones that they already have. They put customer retention and support on just kind of the back burner, thinking those customers will always be there. But here's the thing, investing in customer support and in ongoing engagement can actually lead to more sustainable growth. When companies prioritize retaining their customers and providing that excellent service, they end up with happier, more loyal customers. And that's good from any bottom line, right? Even as technology advances and automation becomes more prevalent, keeping, you know, that personal touch can set a company apart from competition. It's about understanding customer needs and maintaining that human connection, even in a high-tech world. Now, don't ignore the other side of the marketing funnel, my friends. I talked a lot about the bow tie funnel. Show your customers the love. Nurture them to be your ambassadors. So in a nutshell, focusing on long-term customer satisfaction and retention isn't just a nice to have, it's a must have. What did you take away from today's episode? I want to hear it. Post it on the Let's Talk Marketing LinkedIn page or check it out on the YouTube channel. Leave it in a review on Apple. Slide into my DMs. Let's keep this conversation going, my friends. A special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Eich, and thank you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.